Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, July 15th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A lawyer representing disappeared Occupy Africa Unit Square leader Itai Dzamara has urged President Robert Mugabe to publicly talk about the abducted activist to give the case a high profile and urgency it deserves.
Dzamara is not the only person that has gone missing and the police have failed to track that person down. We have, from as far back as during the liberation war, Edson Stone.
Vendors clash with police in the eastern border city of Mutare following attempts to remove them from illegal trading sites.
It's in accordance with what the government directive which was issued sometime like that we need to remove all illegal vendors within the CBD area. Today it is the day that we have moved the vendors to the designated areas within the city.
And 16 young Zimbabwean entrepreneurs have been selected to participate in a summit on global entrepreneurship to be hosted by President Barack Obama in Kenya this month.
These stories and much, much more coming up.
Zimbabwean lawyer Charles Kwaramba, representing disappeared Occupy Africa Unit Square leader Itai Dzamara, has urged President Robert Mugabe to publicly talk about the abducted activist to give the case a high profile and urgency it deserves. The remarks follow pronouncements by President Mugabe's spokesman George Charamba that Mr. Mugabe will not be commenting on the matter. Dzamara was abducted on March 9 this year by five unidentified armed men in Harare's Glenview suburb as he was getting a haircut at a local barber shop. The activist spearheaded the pro-democracy movement that demanded the resignation of Mr. Mugabe for allegedly failing to deliver.
But the investigations seem to have stalled with the head of the Police Law and Order Unit in the Criminal Investigations Department, Crispin Makedenge, refusing to comment, referring Studio 7 to the Police General Headquarters. The story took yet another bizarre turn when Deputy Home Affairs Minister Ziyambi Ziyambi told Studio 7's Blessing Zulu today that Dzamara is not the only activist to have vanished, giving an example of veteran nationalist Edson Sithole, who disappeared before independence in 1975 and was never found.
We don't have any significant leads at the moment, so they are still trying to, if they could get any leads. The problem is, you see, when something happens and the police were not in the vicinity and nobody can give accurate information that can lead to a specific person, it becomes very difficult. You can speculate and do everything, but the law enforcement agents will be doing their job. But once they get a proper lead, then they'll be able to work on a definitive path.
How about those critics who are saying the police and the government are not doing enough to locate Mr. Dzamara?
Dzamara is not the only person that has gone missing and the police have failed to track that person down. We have, from as far back as during the liberation war, Edson Stone. Up to this day, we do not have a lead. So for people to apportion blame on people who did not create a situation becomes very problematic.
That was Deputy Home Affairs Minister Ziyambi Ziyambi speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Opposition groups, non-governmental organizations and Western governments have all been piling pressure on the government to locate Dzamara. The High Court ordered the government to find the missing activist. Blessing Zulu also reached Kwaramba, who also said the investigations have been very slow.
The same status prevails currently. The police have not made any headway. They still continue to file their reports, which really contain nothing. The reports do not really show significant effort made in trying to locate Itai Dzamara. So we are still stuck. We are still in the same position The family is suffering. The lawyers are desperately looking for him. The police, we don't know.
President Mugabe's spokesperson, George Charamba, says the president will not comment on the issue at the moment because the police are responsible for doing that. Do you think Mr. Mugabe should comment as the lawyer representing Itai?
Well, he must. I mean, he's the head of state. And if a person goes missing in your country, a country that you preside over, you must surely express even just your own concern about the missing person. You may not know who he is. You may not know how to find him, but you surely do care about his whereabouts. So his comments are important because they send a message, you know. As the head of the state, you must be able to send a message that you are worried about the person going missing. It's not just about telling us about what is being done. Of course, we need that to the police. But as the leader of the nation, when a person goes missing from your home, it's like a father at home, you know. If something happens as a father, you must be seen to be saying or doing something about it.
That was Charles Kwaramba, a lawyer representing Itai Dzamara, who is also a member of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
There were running battles in Mutare City today between the municipal police and Zimbabwe Republic Police as law enforcement agents clamped down on illegal vendors and tried to drive them to new vending sites allocated by the local authority. Our correspondent Lloyd Amoyo has the story.
Most of the vendors who were being forced to leave illegal selling sites came at the civic center and vowed to stay put until council addresses all their grievances, including the provision of convenient vending stalls with toilets. Some business people in the eastern border city applauded the move taken by the police, saying they will now be able to sell their goods without interference from the vendors. One of the affected vendors, Tendai Gotora, said some of them were not allocated the new stalls by the local authority. His sentiments were echoed by several others who said they have been driven from customers in the city center. The chairperson of the Mutare Informal Traders Union, Ivan Mbengo, said there is need for dialogue between the local authority, vendors and the police. He urged his colleagues to avoid any conflicts with municipal police and other security agents.
Position with regards the movement of informal traders from the pavements of the streets of Mutare, surely there's need for orderliness and for people to trade peacefully following the bylaws of the municipalities.
Mbengo said the local authority should also seriously consider constructing permanent structures for the vendors.
We are the people who identified Chidzere as the permanent place for us, since we had a plan to build a multi-story building which was going to accommodate quite a good number of landless, shopless citizens of Mutare who are interested in doing business. So to that end, by preparing Chidzere for informal traders, I said that was a positive indication. And I also hailed the city fathers for taking such a move.
Mutare businessman Hassan Hussein commended the move taken by the local authority, saying that they were now going to operate their businesses without any hindrance.
I wish those vendors who were trying to earn a living that hopefully where they are now, they will be able to succeed.
Mutare Mayor Councillor Tatenda Namarare told Studio 7 the move today was in line with the government directive to remove the illegal vendors from undesignated selling sites.
It's in accordance with what the government directive, which was issued sometime back, that we need to remove all illegal vendors within the CBD area. So as a council, we had already embarked on that exercise as we have been renovating the designated area. So we have completed renovating the designated area. So today it is the day that we have moved the vendors to the designated areas within the city.
The mayor said it is untrue that the new vending sites do not have toilets, adding that street traders should put their own shelters.
Now, regarding ablution facilities, if you look at Chidzere Park, ablution facilities are there. And this is where we're going to house almost all the vendors will be housed there. Then the issue of sheds, usually these vendors, they come up with their own makeshift sheds. So as the time moves on, we as council obviously have to create sheds for them. But at the present moment, they have to use their own means of getting their sheds.
The removal of illegal vendors started in Harare last week, where at least 25 vendors have been arrested and are now facing charges of public violence. Millions of Zimbabweans have engaged in vending to make ends meet due to the current harsh economic situation in the country. Reporting for Studio 7 at Chidzere in Mutare, this is Lloyda Moyo.
Some Zimbabweans living with albinism say they are facing many problems, including common cultural myths associated with their skin condition, public discrimination, and lack of government support. Our correspondent Lloyda Moyo has more details.
More than 14,000 Zimbabweans live with albinism, a mutation of several genes which causes a deficit in the production of melanin that is responsible for determining skin and hair color. According to the United Nations, the physical appearance of persons with albinism is often the object of erroneous beliefs and myths influenced by superstition, which foster their marginalization and social exclusion. This leads to various forms of stigma and discrimination. The United Nations says most beliefs and myths associated with albinism are centuries old and present in cultural attitudes and practices around the world. 20-year-old human rights activist Phyllis Muzongi of the Zimbabwe Albinos Association, who lives with albinism, says women with this condition have become targets of rape.
Yeah, people used to believe that if you slept with a person with albinism, you actually cure HIV and AIDS.
In 2013, the United Nations Human Rights Council adopted a resolution calling for the prevention of attacks and discrimination against people with albinism. Despite such moves, Muzongi says people living with albinism do not access education facilities and are normally sidelined at workplaces simply because of their skin color.
They are facing low job opportunities because some other jobs do not cater for them, because sometimes they are being done in the sunlight. We don't need to be exposed on sunlight.
She says there is also a need for the Minister of Education to seriously consider having large prints in books used in schools due to eyesight problems associated with albinism.
Because they will be facing a problem of not actually seeing the things written on the paper because there is no large print.
Human rights activist Andrew Mambondiani, who is also a journalist, says there is need for the government to empower people living with albinism so that they can be self-reliant.
There is need to increase the funds so that they can be friendly to people with albinism, and also in class they should be allowed to sit, especially at the front near the blackboards or where the teacher is writing, so that they'll be able to see what the teacher is writing.
If empowered, Muzongi says albinos will manage to even buy sunscreen, creams, umbrellas, long-sleeved clothes and hats which protect them from direct sunlight that damages their skin.
There is a shortage of sunscreen lotions, which we are pressing as people living with albinism. Most of us, we no longer have money to buy those lotions. We face problems of sunburns. If you get burned, we face some problems of cancer. We need to have some umbrellas as well as some lotions. We also need to have some sunglasses so that will be easy to read on the board or even to avoid the light penetrating to our eyes directly.
But traditional healer Alfonso Mabele still believes that people with this condition are cursed. This is a common belief among traditional healers who have been accused in some East African nations and others of using albinos body parts to produce juju or muti for empowering politicians and business people. The United Nations estimates that in Tanzania alone, about 75 albinos have been killed since 2000, and the frequency of attacks on them seem to be increasing. The effectiveness of this is widely regarded as a myth, as there is no scientific evidence to prove such claims.
That was reporter Lloyda Moyo giving us the first edition of a two-part series on albinism. But are attitudes towards the people with albinism changing?
This is a pigment defect. It's in every culture. It's not traditional. There are Indian albinos, English albinos.
Being an albino, I don't think they are disabled. They can just work just like anyone else.
Tune in tomorrow for more details. Don't miss it here on Studio 7.
Lead
leaders meeting in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia this week at the third International Conference on Financing for Development have urged concerted continental and global efforts for accelerated domestic financing for health. The meeting also emphasized the continued importance of international support to Africa's disease responses in the spirit of shared responsibility and global solidarity. Most African countries, according to the meeting, have recognized and responded to the need to diversify and expand funding sources for health to reduce aid dependency. Between 2006 and 2011, global domestic investment doubled spending on AIDS, TB, and malaria. In the last 4 years, African countries have increased their domestic resources to fight AIDS by 150%. Makhlio Mafumo with the United Nations Association Zimbabwe attended the meeting in Addis Ababa. He says the leadership shown by all stakeholders is a positive sign for the post-2015 development agenda.
Some of the recommendations that are coming up is the issue of reviewing tax policies. And our government is supposed to review the issues of how they are collecting their tax, and how they are also reviewing the issue of revenue collection, and also the issue of the informal sector, and as to how they can be accountable and how they are supposed to contribute also to this issue of financing.
And looking at the outcome of the Sustainable Development Goals, what is coming out of that?
The document which will be declared tomorrow is going to be the guiding principle for the September adoption of the Sustainable Development Goals. And January 1, 2016, as they resume, they'll be working hand in hand with the issue of financing.
And Mr. Mafumo, we understand that today the issue of financing of health took center stage at these meetings. Can you talk about that and the issue that was coming up on funding health?
The issue of the health transition fund, or the health fund that was there, managed to make sure that HIV AIDS prevalence rate declined. If you can look at other countries, most countries, especially in Africa, there's been a great improvement in terms of HIV and AIDS. Hence now, for the Sustainable Development Goals, the issue of health is not stopping. It's just a continuous process from the Millennium Development Goals to the Sustainable Development Goals and continuing to fund for health. Looking at also the recent issue of the Ebola outbreak, how various stakeholders managed to come together and contribute to this whole issue to make sure that Ebola managed to lower down at much lower levels. So they're emphasizing this issue that health also should play a pivotal role.
That was Makhlio Mafumo with the United Nations Association Zimbabwe on the line with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
Zimbabweans living in other countries scramble for dual citizenship.
The constitution is clear, and the constitutional court, which is the highest court in the land, has made very clear decisions on dual citizenship.
And Farmers Desert broke grain marketing board.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
Greek lawmakers are set to vote Wednesday on tough new bailout legislation as Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras presses lawmakers to support harsh reforms demanded by European creditors in exchange for badly needed cash.
Kenya's capital, Nairobi, is gearing up for the visit of the country's most famous son, U.S. President Barack Obama. This is Mr. Obama's first visit to the country of his father's birth since becoming president, and the city is sparing no expense.
A German court has sentenced a 94-year-old former Nazi officer to 4 years in prison for working as a bookkeeper in the Auschwitz death camp during World War II.
And the Ukrainian officials say 8 soldiers have been killed and 16 wounded from Tuesday morning to Wednesday morning in a sign of intensifying violence between government forces and pro-Russia rebels.
Hundreds of Zimbabweans living in various countries are flocking to the Registrar General's office to get passports in reaction to provisions of the new constitution and recent constitutional court decisions giving a nod to dual citizenship. The Registrar General, Tobaiwa Mudede, is quoted by the state-controlled media as saying that his office cannot cope with the large number of passport applications from Zimbabweans in the diaspora. The state was recently compelled in 2 rulings in the Constitutional Court to grant citizens dual citizenship as per some provisions of the new constitution, which guarantees citizenship to Zimbabweans born in the country and those with parents born in the Southern African nation. Commentators are skeptical about the Registrar General's office's negative attitude on dual citizenship. Mudede was not available for comment as his mobile phone was not reachable. For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube speaks to Alex Magaisa of Kent University in London, who is one of the crafters of the new constitution.
The constitution is clear, and the constitutional court, which is the highest court in the land, has made very clear decisions on dual citizenship. The position is that dual citizenship is permitted. And this has been accepted and recognized by the Constitutional Court in 2 cases, the case involving Mutuma Mawere in 2013 and another case involving Dr. Mazimba Muto in 2014. The only handicap is the office of the Registrar General, Mr. Tobaiwa Mudede, who, for whatever reason, seem to have their own law which they are applying, contrary to what the Constitution and Constitutional Court have ruled. I think that government has stepped in this regard, in particular the Minister of Justice, which is responsible for enforcing the laws, and also the Minister of Home Affairs, under which the Registrar General's office falls, to ensure that there is a clear enforcement of the Constitution and indeed enforcement of the Constitutional Court's rulings. Short of that, I would imagine that there is need for, unfortunately, another test case, which clearly requires the Registrar General to act in accordance with the rulings that have been passed by the Constitutional Court, failure of which he would be in contempt of court. But I would venture to say that he is already in contempt of court because this is what the Constitutional Court has ruled, but they continue to ignore that rule.
Now, when you look at some of the demands that are being made by the RG's office, they're saying a person should be physically there to get a passport.
No, the point that we are making here is that there is what the law provides, but if what the law provides is hindered or made difficult to achieve by administrative mechanisms or things which are unreasonable, then that also needs to be challenged. And as I have said, if you look at the website of the Registrar General's office today, you will see there is actually a notice which says that your citizenship is prohibited. So they are giving a wrong impression to the public, but at the same time, they've also put in place administrative procedures for people who want to enforce the rights that are granted. And these administrative procedures are making it difficult for them to enforce their rights.
So does it mean that a person, let's say, living in America, Britain or Australia can approach the embassies of Zimbabwe and actually put an application there for dual citizenship?
Well, you know what? The point here is this. The law recognizes that a Zimbabwean who is a Zimbabwean by birth is entitled to Zimbabwean citizenship. There is no way that you are going to make an application and say, I want to be a dual citizen. You simply apply for your passport. Now, if the state were to say that, do you hold any other passport? Of course, you say, yes, you do. Is it allowed in terms of the law? Nothing is not prohibited. And so if they say that you cannot get a passport because you hold an American or a British passport and you are a citizen by birth, then obviously they will be infringing your rights and you are entitled to challenge that.
So if they say you are a citizen by birth, what's the meaning here?
When we were doing the Constitution, we defined it broadly to mean not only a person who is born in Zimbabwe, on the soil of Zimbabwe, but it can be and who is born outside Zimbabwe, as long as they can prove that parents, or at least one of the parents, was ordinarily resident in Zimbabwe, they will also qualify as a BEP.
So now give Zimbabweans advice, those that are living in the diaspora, about getting this dual citizenship.
People want advice, and if people are having challenges, they just simply need to obviously get legal advice. We can't get advice via this medium, but it's important that, and to allay people's fears about dual citizenship, that the only reason why they're having difficulties is because of officials who are putting across administrative mechanisms or measures which are frustrating that process. But, you know, that requires engagement, like I said, with the government to ensure that the process is smoother and there are less difficulties than people are experiencing at the moment.
That was Alex Magaisa of Kent University speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from London.
Young designer Immaculate Kwashira has found a niche in designing wedding clothing for men and dreams of expanding her up-and-coming Immaculate D label into a colossal fashion house. But her dreams are not without problems given the poor state of Zimbabwe's economy, as Ntungameli Nkomo reports.
24-year-old Kwashira studied fashion and design at Chinoy University of Technology and is now out to conquer the design world. Kwashira works for JT Clothing in Harare, but when she clocks out around 5 p.m., she goes straight home to start working on designs for her personal label, Immaculate D. Her designs are a mixture of conventional fabric and accessories like animal skin that she says tell a story about Zimbabwean culture and ancient tradition. Kwashira explains why she prefers this style.
I feel it creates identity for us as Zimbabweans. So I'm bringing the past and the present, living in a modern world, and taking that which once existed. Like you'd find from my designs, I take the shield, leopard print, which symbolize the power and authority.
So, what makes her designs unique?
What's unique about my designs are the shapes, like I said, the shield, the tools that were used in the past, the basketry, the weaving part, the way people used to construct, the method of construction that was used in the past. So, that's what creates my signature.
The young fashion designer says she draws her inspiration from world-acclaimed Italian menswear designer Giorgio Armani, whose personal fortune is said to be over $8 billion. As a startup, Kwashira says her label is feeling the pinch of the collapsing economy, but she remains hopeful that a few years from now, she can have the means to attend the World Fashion Week, normally hosted by big fashion capitals like New York, Paris, London, and Milan. But for now, she is working hard to satisfy her growing number of customers and pushing her clothing through small-time means of marketing.
I market myself through, I've got a magazine that I have. So I talk to people via WhatsApp, business cards, the magazine, and I've done a fashion show, an individual fashion show, which is a fastest way to market yourself as a designer.
Kwashira's designs are also available on the Zimbabwe Fashion International website, and she can be contacted by email on immaculatekwashira@gmail.com. In Washington, I am Ntungameli Nkomo reporting for VOA Studio 7.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about the vending crisis in Zimbabwe as police beat up and arrest street vendors.
And now to recap today's top stories.
A lawyer representing disappeared Occupy Africa Unity Square leader Itai Dzamara has urged President Robert Mugabe to publicly talk about the abducted activist to give the case a high profile and urgency it deserves.
Vendors clashed with police today in the eastern border city of Mutare following attempts to remove them from illegal trading sites.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.